Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials. For today's episode of the ACT podcast, I am speaking with Jared Baton, Vice President, Clinical Development, and HIV Franchise Head at Gilead Sciences. Outside of his current role with Gilead, which he started in 2020, Jared is also a professor and affiliate professor at the University of Washington in the departments of Global Health, Medicine, and Epidemiology. He has been with the university for over 17 years and has also served as a vice chair, vice dean, associate professor, assistant professor, and senior fellow. So with that, thank you for joining me today, Jared.
Thank you. Great to be here.
First off, could you describe your career journey up to the present for our audience?
Of course. It's really good to be here today. I'm really excited. We were talking about who your audience is before I joined, and it's exactly my people. I've been so lucky to work all over the world with many different people on clinical trials for decades now. And boy, the work cannot be more fulfilling every single day. So my history, as you introduced, I lead the HIV development program here at Gilead Sciences, a job that I've had for the last 3 years, and could not be more proud to be in this place that has dedicated itself to HIV treatment, HIV prevention, and really to ending the epidemic all around the world. My own background, I'm a physician and a clinical researcher and epidemiologist by training, and I've worked in HIV my entire career. First in academia, as you mentioned, where I was both a physician and an epidemiologist and a professor and a researcher, and then most recently now in the private sector. I started my career in the 1990s and started working on HIV, understanding HIV, optimizing HIV treatment with the tools that we had, and leaning in towards what would become the whole field of HIV prevention. And I worked first in East Africa, in Kenya, where I lived in the 1990s at a time that was obviously very, very, very different from today. It really set forward my dedication to building a whole career to ending the HIV epidemic for people all around the world. And I think honestly, it's at my career into doing clinical research and clinical trials that really make those big step changes that make the difference in people's lives all around the world. Still now, decades later, the disproportionate need in HIV is great. Here in the United States, where I'm standing right now as we're talking, and in places all around the world where HIV continues 40 years after the first case, 40 plus years after the first cases of HIV were recognized to affect far too many people. And it's that gap that motivates me every single day, the opportunity to make a difference for populations, for women, for children, for men, for young people all around the world to think about a future in which HIV doesn't exist. I just want to take a moment to flag that we're coming up on World AIDS Day, which is December 1st of every year, a moment for us to reflect on the horror of the history and the promise of the future for HIV. And so much of that progress has been because of clinical research, getting clinical research motivated and driven by advocacy and community engagement and the ability of research and community to work together to figure out the very best things for HIV treatment and then for prevention and how to deliver those around the world. I think HIV is a model of how to interface and back and forth between how we do research, how we bring new ideas forward and innovations, and how we drive that into clinical trials efficiently and with the great public health benefits we can achieve in mind, and how we do that every step of the way from the first glimmer of an idea all the way to delivering it best as we can for population impact with the communities who we all serve and for whom the benefits must be accrued.
It's very obvious from, you know, the way you speak that you're very passionate about finding therapies and working in clinical research for HIV, which we'll get into the nuts and bolts of that in a little bit here. But just going back to when you were first starting your career, was there something particular that interested you about the specific therapeutic area?
Of course. You know, so I certainly came of age at the time when HIV was in the news and highly resonant in the world. You know, I'm a gay man in my early 50s, and there's certainly not a time in my adult life where HIV has not existed in the world. So I remember well before there was HIV treatment. I remember well when testing came about. I remember well, as I mentioned before, I have worked in globally on HIV, particularly in East and Southern Africa for 25 years. And I remember very well working there as a younger scientist in a place where HIV testing was limited, HIV treatment was non-existent, and where stigma and discrimination and death were rampant. And those early experiences being in a world where HIV was new and scary and dominant and not treatable. And then also coming of scientific age in a time where the innovation started to happen, the innovations that became the HIV treatment, the treatment options that exist today, that for most people living with HIV means they can take, in most cases, a single pill once a day and be able to take their viral replication levels down to undetectable and their lifespans up to what would be normal in the absence of HIV. That innovation was also at the very same time that I was in school to become a scientist, and that this physician and a scientist, and all of those moments drive my enthusiasm for this specific therapeutic area. I also have to say the other thing that has driven me all along is how HIV is so collaborative. HIV sits at the interface. Obviously, it's an infectious disease, so it sits firmly in medicine and public health. But it interfaces with social science and behavioral science, and it interfaces with community and government and religion and society. And all of that comes together in thinking about not only how to make medicines, but how to make medicines to be impactful for HIV treatment, for prevention, for public health benefit, and really towards ending the epidemic. It is what drives me, is what made me very proud to be where I am now here at Gilead Sciences, because this is a place that pulls together those core principles, scientific innovation fueled by a long history of working on HIV here and advancing health equity at the same time, where everything that I get to do in doing the science here is how can we bring forward new innovation that's really going to make a difference in people's lives? And at the same time, how are we making sure that the innovations that we bring forward are grounded in what people want and then are going to be available to make the difference in people's lives at the individual and public health level thereafter.
Hey, great. Thank you. So now we'll get into kind of the clin-op side of what, you know, you're seeing and what you're at the forefront of when it comes to HIV. So we hear about patient recruitment being a challenge for a lot of infectious diseases and clinical trials. Is that something that can be said the same for HIV clinical trials? And could you just give us an overview of maybe what that space looks like with patient recruitment right now?
I think in much the same way that conducting clinical research is challenging at the big scale and challenging good clinical research is tough even moment to moment, HIV work shares that. And it's why it draws in people who have a lot of commitment to mission, have a lot of commitment to the end game, which is really making a huge difference in individual and population lives. And also people who really love to problem solve, because there's no, as you know well, there's no lack of problems in doing clinical research that hit you every single day. And the creativity, the drive, the motivation in everyone I've ever worked with in clinical research and clinical operations is about figuring out how to do all those things really well with that end game in mind. In HIV in particular, there shares a lot of also specific challenges that clinical research faces. That is the engagement of racial and ethnic minorities in clinical research, in particular for HIV, because HIV disproportionately tracks along the social fault lines of our societies. And so HIV is disproportionate among Black individuals in the United States, among ethnic minorities in the United States as well. And the ability to engage populations who are disproportionately affected has to be a top priority in our work. I have to say that the work that we do now here at Gilead in HIV treatment, for example, and also HIV prevention, puts first and foremost the engagement of communities in the planning of our research, the planning of the things that we bring forward, and in the conduct of our clinical trials, so that from the very beginning, we are having discussions about how to make sure that the populations that we recruit in clinical research are representative of where the disproportionate burden is. Because in the end, we do this work so that we do this work not so that we get scientific papers. We don't do this work so that we get even regulatory approvals, although those are, of course, all essential. We do this work because we want to change the health trajectory of societies and contribute in the whatever positive way that we're able to contribute to that. And that has to be making sure that our clinical trials are representative of the populations that are most in need. We spent a lot of time thinking about innovation in clinical trial design, innovation in clinical trial recruitment, and how we speak better and more directly and more engagingly to populations who may want to enroll in clinical trials. And we do that through a ton of collaboration with community advising what we're doing. Well, I have to say, I'm really proud, for example, of our HIV programs. We have just last week and actually coming up the week after next, we have standing community advisory groups. One of them calls themselves our community accountability group because they hold us accountable to doing the work well, and they hold themselves accountable to making sure they're advising as well. And those standing community advisory groups advise our prevention, treatment, and HIV cure programs here to make sure that we are conducting clinical research that is asking the right questions for communities and doing the and getting the right answers, engaging the right populations, so that when we have the answers, we'll be able to lean in to try to get the public health impact that everybody's really trying for with this work. Building those groups, those standing groups in each of our pillar programs has been incredibly helpful in guiding the kinds of questions we're asking, the kinds of designs of studies we're doing, the specifics of how we're recruiting, retaining individuals with it who are volunteering within our clinical trials, and thinking forward to how we do the next trial even better than the trial that we're working on now.
Early in your response there, you know, you kind of glossed over that there are obviously some other operational challenges when it comes to clinical trials in the HIV space. Could you elaborate on what some of those are, or maybe like what's top of mind for you right now when it comes to some of those challenges?
Let me give you one specific example that I spend a lot of time thinking about. In HIV prevention, we've come incredibly far, and we still have a long way to go. So HIV prevention, the innovation in developing medicine to change HIV prevention has come a tremendous way in the last just over a decade, where we have now medicines that individuals can take that are effective at significantly reducing the risk of acquiring HIV. And from a time before that, when there are no medicines that have been demonstrated for HIV prevention, that is tremendous innovation to be able to have medicines that work for HIV prevention. And those medicines are used by many, many thousands of people around the world every day for HIV prevention. And yet, well over a million new infections occur all around the world today. In the United States, it's estimated that, you know, about 3/4 of individuals who might most benefit from HIV prevention medicines aren't receiving them right now. And so while there are both medicines that are effective, that are available, there's also a huge gap between the number of people who are taking them and the number of people who could. So the challenge that sets up for us is, how do you study some new prevention products when the ones that exist have very, very high HIV prevention efficacy? And so the field, we've been embedded in this as we've thought about bringing forward new HIV prevention medicines that would give new ways for individuals to take medicines, for example, long-acting medicines that would allow individuals to receive a medicine and not have to think about it and have it be discreet, so they won't have to tell others that they may be taking an HIV prevention medicine. How do we develop clinical trials in a way to be able to test whether something new is safe and effective while we have other things that are also safe and effective? So that's been really important, because we here at Gilead don't stand for, and the field doesn't stand for the doing classic placebo-controlled trials that one would normally do in lots of other fields, because we have such effective alternatives. On the other side of things, you know, if a placebo-controlled trial could be done, the other trial could be a test against the things that already exist. The challenge with the test against things that already exist is the scale of the trials could be so great that they might be operationally infeasible because the level of HIV protection when the medicines are taken well, CDC, for example, estimates to be, you know 99%. So into that, we bring a lot of clinical trial innovation. One of that has been Gilead in collaboration with many others, and convened, for example, by the Forum for Collaborative Research, a group that sits in between the private sector, academic sector, and regulatory sector, brought people together to say, like, what can we do to do new HIV prevention trials? And what can we think about as novel clinical trial designs? And one of those is what we're doing right now in our prevention program, which is called a counterfactual HIV design, essentially saying, what would HIV risk have been in a population just like you existed in the trial if you had given them a placebo without actually giving them a placebo? And that's done through some fantastic laboratory science and acknowledgement of and great recognition of epidemiologic data from the population. And then recruiting in clinical trials in the same way you normally do, populations to receive either a new investigational HIV prevention medicine or one of the established HIV prevention medicines, but in a study where everyone receives a potential HIV prevention agent so that no one is receiving a placebo medication in these kind of trials before. In trials as would have been done in the past and would be unethical now. And I think that's when I think about a lot, is how we can do new kinds of studies with really robust science, enrolling individuals who into clinical trials who are volunteering their time and their energies, and be able to say, and in this trial, we're doing the very, very best we can for you to make sure that you are participating fully in novel research, and we're doing our very best to minimize your chances of HIV, because what we wouldn't want to do are trials that answer something but aren't done in a right, ethical, or scientifically rigorous way. So I love the innovation in clinical research that we're doing, and I love the innovation in the medicines that we develop, but also the innovation in how we do this kind of science, and that's informed by really strong collaborative work across industry, regulatory, government, academia, and advocacy all coming together to say, how do we do this kind of work really well?
So going back to the innovation part that you just ended on, and going back to the start of your career as well, from when you first started working in HIV clinical research to the present, how has the research or the innovation into developing potential therapies advanced?
It's amazing to think back 40 plus years into the HIV epidemic and remember the times when, first of all, it wasn't known what the virus was. And then even when the virus was identified, there wasn't testing. And then even when there was testing, there was no therapies. And to think how far we've come from then is really tremendous, where individuals now can take medicines, in many cases, a tablet a day, that viral level is down to undetectable, and have individuals be uninfectious to their partners. So transmission can be arrested in that way, and that individuals lead healthier lives that are estimated to be the same as individuals living without HIV. And on this other side of things, to have effective prevention medications that people can take, that is such a sea change from the beginning of my career in HIV, where to go from no effective therapies to effective HIV therapies and effective preventative therapies. And I could not have imagined that when I first started working. And at the same time, we still have far to go in HIV, because of individuals living with HIV around the world and here in the United States, up to a third of people aren't effectively treated. And not effectively treated becomes just the stigma, discrimination, the challenge, the life complexity of taking a medicine every day is too much. And too many people acquire HIV every year. And so for people who could benefit from HIV prevention and not be able to take the preventive medicines that exist now, how important it is to think of innovation to take us to the next step, which is really eliminating new HIV infection, ending the epidemic around the world. And that's what I get to work on every day, is thinking about what are the clinical research decisions, what are the clinical trials that will get us to that point. Our focus has been on long-acting medicines, medicines that, for example, a pill like once a week or longer, an injection once every several months, you know, twice a year, even more infrequently than that, that would lead to effective HIV treatment or effective HIV prevention, so that individuals could find something that would work for them and be able to, because it's longer acting, have something that removed the challenges of the day-to-day, taking of a pill, removed the stigma and the discrimination maybe of carrying something home, allowed people to have discreetness and privacy in their use of treatment and prevention, and got everyone to being able to choose an option that would be workable for them and for their treatment or prevention success. I think about that every day when I think about the future and how where we might be going for the development of prevention potential therapies. And it's every single day, and it's in the big stuff and the small stuff, because it's in the medicines that we bring forward to make sure that they're really responding to the needs of people and they're person-centric all along the way. And it's making sure that the clinical research that we do and the clinical trials that we do are engaging right, so that we do have those innovations come forward, that they really are going to make the difference at the level of society.
So now, as you mentioned, looking forward into the area of HIV clinical research, what do you anticipate this space looking like in, say, 5 years from now?
You know, it's such an exciting time in HIV, both treatment and prevention, because this era of exploring longer acting therapies and longer acting therapies that really can make a difference and fit into people's lives and make this big difference for both treatment and prevention is super exciting. So these next 5 years are a time for significant innovation and significant innovation and the conduct of all the clinical trials that are going to show that innovation and be able to bring these longer acting ideas into reality. So I'm super excited about that. I'm also super excited about what even comes beyond that. And I think I mentioned it earlier that in addition to HIV treatment and prevention, our program here at Gilead also has a pillar in HIV cure. And that is a tremendously complicated scientific problem. The idea of curing HIV and developing therapeutics that would be able to really either allow people not to be on therapies at all for extended period of times, or even to eradicate the virus from their bodies. And I'm really excited also in these next 5 years for really important innovations happening in the HIV cure space, because that is the thing to keep eyes on horizon, because it would be such a tremendous achievement scientifically, obviously, but also but really is an important achievement for community and for society. I certainly know that we don't do any of this work alone, particularly in HIV, and we talked about it earlier. HIV is so tremendously collaborative across sort of all facets of society. And when I also think about these next 5 years, it's all of those facets contributing to what could be ending this epidemic around the world. And that is, you know, that is government, that is industry, that is academia, that is advocacy and community, that is, and it's in every single place on the planet. And I'm excited for that collaboration as well.
All right, wonderful. Well, this has been a great conversation, Jared. Before we end, is there anything that you'd like to conclude on? Any final thoughts?
No, I really enjoyed having this conversation. Thank you so much. And thank you to your listeners for everything that they do every day.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Jared.